Susie Wiles, good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Associate Professor Susie Wiles of the University of Auckland. YouTube, it's a lot to answer for. As well as bringing us much joy and many interesting things and lots of time wasting, it is one of the key conduits of these mad conspiracy theories that pop up. Have you been down a couple of rabbit holes for us?
I've been trying not to, but I've been getting inundated, actually, with people sending me links to videos saying, you know, can we believe these and everything? And in fact, one of them that I was sent this week, it was over an hour long. It started with 10 minutes of a professor listing all their scientific credentials and talking about their career. And it was really, really impressive and really got you, you know, designed to trust what they say. And then they started with it. So it was a COVID-19 related video. And then they started with the science, which I've got waving my inverted commas fingers. And the first statement they said was simply not true. And so I know that because I've been reading the literature, and it was pretty depressing going, wow, okay, so people are watching this. You've just set out all your credentials and now you're spreading misinformation. So a study's just come out that looked at the role of YouTube in this spread of misinformation. And it's been, you know, this is something that's been well known about YouTube, and it was true during the outbreak of Zika virus. It was true during Ebola. And so they were looking in the study specifically at how was this true for COVID-19. And so what they did back in March, they cleared their browser search history and they put their web browser in what's known as incognito mode. And so that means that it doesn't use any of the algorithms that it normally uses to sort of give you what it thinks you want. And so they then searched YouTube using the keywords coronavirus and COVID-19, and they picked the 150 videos that had the most views. And so what they did then was basically narrowed it down to English language ones that were less than an hour, and they removed any duplicates, and they ended up with 69 videos that had been seen more than 257 million times. And so what they were asking was how much misinformation was in these videos. It was very, very sad. So one of the first things they did was look at sort of categorize the videos. So where had they come from? And about a third of them were from different news sources. About a quarter of them were made by the public. And just 2% of the videos were from kind of official government sources. So very clearly the videos that are getting the most views are not ones that are made officially. You know, they're either things said by news or by the public. And then what they did was they had two researchers independently watch each video, and they had a whole bunch of different sort of scoring systems, one of which they had made up that scored based on how much good or bad information there was specifically about COVID-19, so related to the transmission of the virus, the typical symptoms, treatments, all those kinds of things. And what they found was that roughly 1 in 4 of the videos contained misleading or inaccurate information. And those videos had been watched more than 62 million times worldwide. And they were very much not the ones that were made by the government organizations. So those videos were the ones that were most informative and had the highest quality content, but they're not the ones that people are watching. And so that's really depressing.
Can I ask you, though, on that algorithm question, because one of the problems with YouTube is its algorithm has learned, AI learned, that the more extreme the content, the longer people watch, whatever the content is. Now, if they had turned their algorithm suggestion filter off, does this mean that people were self-selecting the stuff? Or is it likely this was the stuff that was being pushed at them?
No. So they turned the algorithms off to find out what the most watched videos were.
I see. So these are
the videos that are coming up on people's algorithms.
Right.
And so they will be. Yeah. So it's essentially what YouTube is feeding people through their algorithms.
So that brings us back to the same argument we were having just over a year ago about the mosque shootings, which is this company in particular and these social media companies sharing companies in particular, their responsibility to deal to those algorithms. They haven't, clearly.
And I mean, as it was a year ago, it kills people. And this is it's horrifying that something isn't being done, that the companies aren't being, forced to address this, because, as I say, it's 62 million people have been seeing these things. And I guess we're seeing it play out here, right? How many attacks have there been on our phone masts, over the last few weeks because of the videos that are being shared around conspiracy theories and things? I mean, what it's interesting in the paper, what they suggest is that because YouTube is so dominant, that public health agencies should be collaborating with YouTube producers to try and, disseminate sort of their information through these channels. That's very hard if your channel is one that is all about disseminating misinformation,
Exactly.
because there will always be those people who that was all they ever see because of the algorithm. So this is a problem that needs, two solutions, one of which is the making of good quality information to, I guess, in the ways that then is gets to different audiences, but also that these companies do have a responsibility to cut down on the way their algorithms
Yeah,
work.
good luck with that one. Let's talk about teenage dogs instead.
I love this story, maybe partly because I'm now the mother of a teenager, although she doesn't like me talking about her in public. But the question was, and I guess it's an important one for anybody who's trying to train a puppy. So the question was, do dogs behave like teenagers? Because of course it's a well-known thing that teenagers go through a difficult period. They're testing boundaries, and there's all sorts of changes going on in their brains and bodies. And so these researchers wanted to know if the same was true of dogs. So what they did was they had a study that involved nearly 300 dogs that were going through guide dog training. So they were mostly dogs that were either full breed or crossbreeds of golden retrievers, labradors, and German shepherds. So bear that in mind when we talk about the data. And then they had various different parts of the study. So one part of the study was where all the dogs, their carers and their trainers were filling out questionnaires about them at different stages. So when they were 5 months old, which is considered a puppy, when they're 8 months old, which is like the doggy equivalent of a teenager, and then when they're 12 months old, which is when they're considered adults. And then another part of the study, so that big survey sort of had all sorts of things about their behavior and stuff, but then they also did some experiments, and one of which was to look at their obedience. So in that experiment, they took a group of dogs, and they were asked to sit by either their carer or by one of the researchers. So, and it was the same researcher and one that the dogs didn't know at all. And they chose the sit command because apparently by the time a dog is 5 months old, every one of those dogs knows that command and they will sit. And so what they recorded the dogs being asked to sit by these two people, and then essentially said that the number of times they had to be asked to sit was considered a sign of the dog's obedience. So can you guess what happened? I love this.
Go on,
So
go on.
dogs were less likely to do as they were told to sit when they were in this teenage stage, the 8 months, compared to when they were 5 months, but only if the command was given by their carer and not a stranger. So if the stranger asked them to sit when they were 5 months, 8 months, or 12 months, they paid attention. But if their carer asked them, apparently they were fine at 5 months, and then there was a real dip in their obedience at 8 months, and then it kind of went back to normal when they got to 12 months. So it does seem that they have a bit of a streak in them that is sort of equivalent to teenagers.
It's
And
quite short,
apparently,
though, isn't it?
yes.
Tell me, do they
Thank
also
goodness.
stop barking and just grunt at you?
What was really cool was the data from that experiment, actually also backed up by the questionnaires on all the dogs. And so again, they showed that so their questions like, does the dog refuse commands, or does it come back to you immediately when it's off the lead? And they were basically scored much lower on that when they were 8 months than when they did at 5 and 12 months. So yeah. Teenage dogs, there you go. Bear that in mind when you're trying to train them, I
All
think.
right, I've given you 90 seconds, which is not enough for any story about bioluminescence. Do you want to take it on?
Sure, let's do it. So this is about elephant seals. And so apparently elephant seals can they can hunt creatures that glow, and it's thought that maybe the creatures that glow, sort of fish and stuff, might use that glow to basically try and get out of their way, like to flash at them and sort of escape. And so they fitted these little sensors on elephant seals that would pick up light, but would also pick up movement, so that they would basically be able to see when an elephant seal was doing a what they call a prey strike, so attacking something. And basically they found that these strikes coincided with flashes of light, suggesting that they were chasing bioluminescent fish. There you go.
So they're clever? Or they have amazing eyesight, or what?
No, just that they're chasing something, and one of the things they're chasing is something that glows, and that uses that glow to try and distract them. So it's just suggesting something about their prey and why some creatures might glow in the dark, because they're using it to try and distract their predators.
So this really is a yet another story about the genius of all things bioluminescent, isn't it?
I just tried to sneak it in a rather surreptitious way.
And the timing is the thing, isn't it? The timing is the thing. Wonderful stuff. Thank you very much, as always, Susie Wiles, our science commentator.